Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, and we're here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
How are you, Stephen? Good to be with you.
Doing great. And the managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. Sorry I missed last week, and I thought maybe it went so well without me that perhaps you wouldn't have me back again, but it's...
Well, actually, Stephen carried the show, so, I mean, I was just along for the ride, so...
Well, I know how to push the start and stop button on the recorder.
Maybe you'll teach us that eventually, Stephen.
Okay. We're going to kick off with recruiting, and we have I think a little bit of information about Deontay Williams from Plano Prestonwood. What do we got on him?
Yeah, he's the 2016 linebacker, Stephen and Jake, and Jake's talked to him a couple of times. And there was some concern about whether or not Baylor was really going to stay in the race for him. And last week at their closed scrimmage on Saturday, he was able to make the trip down to take in the scrimmage. First time he'd been in the stadium. First time he'd ever been in Waco, too, actually, because the only time he's ever really had a connection with the Baylor coaches was at their camp at Lake Highlands back in June. So the fact that he got down there, watched the scrimmage, got a tour of the stadium, all that good stuff, came away with a much better feeling about Baylor than I think he really had of them before. And really, I think Baylor's put itself in a better position. And he's talked about maybe coming back for the SMU game. Actually, he did say he's planning on coming back for the SMU game, the home opener. So I would think that where Baylor was prior to his visit to where they are now is much better than where they were. Because, Jake, I know you got the sense that when you talked to him a couple weeks ago that you were a little bit leery about where he really was with Baylor.
Well, I can only base it on what he told me. And, you know, he just didn't really speak glowingly of Baylor when I talked to him. And it's funny, Kevin, I think you had talked to him the week before our Baylor Blitz, our weekly big recruiting roundup, and he just happened to call me back after I tried to reach him a few times after I spoke to him, after he spoke to you, rather. And he said to me, I talk to them every now and then. They wanted me to schedule a visit, but I haven't visited anywhere, and maybe I'll consider visiting. I need to explore my options and stuff. End quote. And then, you know, I pressed him a little more about Baylor, and he just didn't really have much to say. And he told other guys in interviews that you know, he was looking to get out of state. So, frankly, in my mind, I wrote him off. And then I talked to you about it, and apparently Baylor has not written him off, you know, and they're working hard to change his mind. And I have not spoken to him since he was at the scrimmage, but obviously if he's going to the SMU game, then there's been a radical change in his mind because I didn't think Baylor had a chance, and now he's going to make two visits within 3 weeks. So obviously things are looking up with him. And he's another Rivals 250 guy, and what Baylor has three of them in the 2016 class already. So just shows how high the staff is aiming with 2016.
No question.
Okay, now also a little bit closer to home, Parrish Cobb, Waco La Vega, 2016 defensive back. What are we hearing on him?
Yeah, and he was also at the closed scrimmage along with Eric Fowler from Manor. Those other two recruits were at the scrimmage on Saturday, and you know, and good vibes for them. I think again, nothing really new as far as Cobb was concerned. Again, the story is that because he's coming off the torn hamstring injury where he missed pretty much all of 2013, that these schools really want to see how he performs during the course of the 2016 season before they move forward with maybe an offer or what have you. In the case of Fowler, I think there was maybe a hint of, I asked him, I said, do you think you would commit if the feeling was right on Saturday? And he goes, I don't know. And obviously that didn't happen, but I do think that Baylor continues to put itself. This is consecutive Saturdays that he was up in Waco watching Baylor perform. So obviously he has a lot of good feelings. And again, as we've discussed before, he's the cousin of current Baylor running back Terrence Williams, who is from Ennis.
Okay, now, is it, I noticed that, is Baylor starting to go after higher level defensive guys? Because they've always gone after high level offense, but are they making a higher push at the, on the defensive side now?
Well, I think they've always gone after higher level defensive guys too. It's just that for some reason, I think things are really clicking with these 2016 recruits more than 2015 and more than any other class. That these guys are starting to, I guess, call the coaches back basically. I think the staff has they've always aimed high. I just think they're hitting on these targets a little more, and these targets are more interested, and that's what a Big 12 championship and new stadium will do for you. So I think for some reason, the success that Baylor's had with the Heisman Trophy and all that, it took some time to really materialize into better recruiting. Now, I mean, I take that back, into excellent recruiting. They've been recruiting better, but this 2016 start shows that they've really parlayed that success into much bigger aspirations with the recruiting class.
Does Bennett, having been here a couple of years and starting to make a mark, does it give them a little bit better focus on the type of defensive player they want?
Yeah, for sure, because every coach is different. They all have their opinions on scouting, and Bennett has certain molds in mind, and I'm sure they're slightly different than what Brian Norwood had. And so, yeah, he's starting to get his type of person into the program, and I'm sure he's probably, you know, more in control of the defensive recruiting, and you know, probably a little bit different philosophy there.
And I think the other thing is too is that Phil just likes to go for the kid who kind of has the chip on his shoulder, a la what Art has always done, kind of go for that kid who has something to prove or whatnot. But I also think, you know, you can even take it to the case of like Colin Brents, even though he's on the roster, but a kid like Colin Brents is a kind of a lunch pail type of kid who's kind of under the kind of diamond in the rough, if you will, under the radar. But yet when Phil looks at him, he just kind of gets gaga because he likes the way that that kid performs, that he wants to perform and compete at a high level. And I think that's why he likes to go after those types of kids.
He definitely goes after those types. But you look at this 2016 class, and I think last I counted 20 of the 33 offers. I think there's been a few more since I counted. But 20 of the 33 were rivals 250 guys. Mm-hmm. Not many guys ranked as the top 250 in the nation have these chips on the shoulder. So I think initially they went after that because that's what they were winning. I still think they'll go after some of those type of guys, but I think Steven's right. I think they have upped their just the standard for some of these guys, and I think you're seeing maybe a few less chip on the shoulder guys just because, look, if you're a four-star guy ranked 120th in the nation, what do you have a chip on your shoulder about? You know, you're obviously getting a lot of respect. So while they have thrived on those type of guys, I think you see that diminish a little.
Okay. Now, we got a couple other guys we wanted to kick over. Rakeem Boyd, 2016 Houston Stafford running back. Jake, I think you've been talking to him.
Yeah, I talked to him over the weekend. He's yet another Rivals 250 recruit. For those who don't pay attention, Rivals 250 means he's ranked top 250 in the nation. The funny thing about him is he doesn't have any offers yet. He's got a lot of interest. And it's not like he didn't do much his sophomore year. He rushed for, I think, 1,500 yards. And this was at one of the top levels of high school football in Texas at Houston Stratford. So I think, I don't know. I don't know what it is that the programs want to see out of him more. Maybe a little speed because he's a big back. But he has definite interest in Baylor. Like I said, no offers yet. And I think I'm curious about how Baylor is going to recruit running backs, both in 2015 and 16, because they have Jamichael Hasty in 2015. They have Cameron Martin in 2016. And that's 2 4-star guys. You don't need a whole lot more when you have a four deep running back, none of them older than a sophomore currently. So I think with a guy like Boyd, they'll maybe wait and see what happens with the rest of the 2015 class before they maybe offer him or offer any other running backs, because frankly, it's just not a position of need for the team. It's a bonus to get extra running backs, but they don't really need them.
Okay. Now, we've mentioned the Rivals 250 several times. Kevin, I know you're our kind of Rivals 250 guru. The new Rivals 250 just came out. How is Baylor looking on that?
Well, they're gonna. The good news is that you know these things are always recycled about every 3 months, and Baylor's three kids are still in it and will stay in it when signing day comes along in February. There's going to be one more evaluation period in December, I believe it is. But for now, Chad President, the Temple quarterback coming in January, just made the 100 list at number 100. So it's not, he just made it, so he's there. And then Blake Lynch out of Gilmer, the talented athlete, who will also, we'll get to him in a second, but he is at number 194. And then Jamichael Hasty, the running back from Longview, is coming in at 214. All these guys may have ticked down just a couple of spots. President may be more pronounced than the other two. But again, they're going to have three, again, with this small class, they're going to have three in the 250. So you can't argue with any of that stuff. So,
Currently, you know, 25% of the 2015 classes ranked in the top 250. That's not a bad percentage.
No, not at all. I think, and like I said, Jake, they're going to be there all the way through, you know, the final ranking period. And anyway, I really think from their perspective, you know, these are really, really talented kids. And if you're going to get, you know, with this class, as the athleticism overall as a whole is so is enormous. Unfortunately, Baylor's team ranking is going to get penalized from an overall standpoint because they're just not going to have a lot of kids in the class.
Yeah, very true. I think in this case, you don't look at where they rank compared to other teams. I think maybe you take the average star rating, what they have, and you can compare that to past classes. You know, maybe this class is an average of a 3.4 or something.
Right.
You know, it'd be higher than past classes. So, yeah, the team rankings, you can throw those out the window when you have 15 guys in your class because some schools will be signing 25 to 30, so it's just not a fair comparison. You know, you talk about all those guys are going to end up in the 250. I think President is a guy who could go way up the list or he could go way down. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't really play much last year, so there's not a whole lot of film on him. They're basing a lot of this off his sophomore year and the fact that he's an incredible athlete. But, you know, he's got a senior year of quarterback play coming up. And let's say he struggles for some reason. I can see him dropping. You know, on the flip side, if he has an outstanding senior year, he's going to go way up. And I think a lot of Baylor fans will be much more excited and not feel like he's a consolation prize to Jarrett Stidham, you know, who's going to Texas Tech, which is the feeling I get a lot with Baylor fans, is that they feel like Baylor missed that top target and that anything else just doesn't compare. But I think President has a chance to, you know, erase the memory of Jarrett Stidham and perhaps win over the fan base.
You know, that goes back to that chip on the shoulder thing, Jake, where, yeah, you're right. Chad missed, only played two games last year and actually, ironically, you know, blew out his knee at Floyd Casey when they were playing South Lake Carroll. And, you know, much like Chad, like we talked about, Jarrett Stidham also is a mid-semester guy, and he just signed his financial aid documents with Texas Tech, so he's gone for good. But at the same time, I also think, too, Chad's been hearing this so much, that I think that maybe there's a part of him that's kind of stoked by this, and he wants to get out there and show everyone, I can flat out play the quarterback position, and you watch. And, you know, I think he'll maybe the motivation, the doubters or whatever, not that he wants to prove it to other people. He doesn't have to prove anything to the Baylor coaches or the analysts, but he has to prove it maybe, but he feels like he needs to prove it to, you know, people on the periphery who may be still, you know, longing for, golly, we missed Jarrett Stidham. Why do, you know, there's this melancholy feeling amongst that kind of rank and file. And Chad's going to go, I can show you that it doesn't really matter. In time, that stuff won't bother him. But at the same time, I can understand why he might feel that way right now.
Yeah, I wish we could fast forward 5 years from now and see how the careers shake out for both those guys. You know, because, again, like you said, melancholy is the right word. I feel like, you know, Stidham was a guy that Baylor definitely targeted. He's from Stephenville. You know, it just seemed like a natural fit, and it didn't happen. And there was just a lot of upset fans about that. But President could wipe that all away for sure.
Time to move on, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, and speaking of time to move on, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got an interview with Colin Brentz, the new Bear position on Baylor defense, and we'll be right back.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And we were able to catch up with Colin Brentz, who went from being a walk-on special teams player to getting a scholarship, and he's the projected starter at Nickelback. So let's hear what Colin's got to say.
Colin, you're quite a success story around here right now.
Well, I hope so. It's not a bad thing, I guess. So.
Well, no, you were a walk-on, you spent 4 years playing special teams, and you broke through to be starter. And you're on the Dean's Honor Roll. So that makes for a pretty full day, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I take a lot of pride in my academics as well as my athletics, so that's one of the reasons I chose to walk on at Baylor is because of their academic background. It's a great university as well as has a great program. So when I got here, I wanted to maintain a high GPA and try to be as successful as I can on the field. So I've been very blessed to get an opportunity for the 3 years I've been here, and I'm really excited, looking forward to this opportunity coming up this year.
Is there any kind of temptation when you're in there and you say, hey, you know what, I was a walk-on, I've been pretty successful, I'm on special teams. You had to keep pushing really hard to get the coach's attention after being on the field around them for several years.
Absolutely. I mean, walk-on's a little bit different than a scholarship player, but regardless of who you are, where you came from, or the situation you're in, every single athlete here is going to be pushing hard to get noticed. So for me, I try not to, you know, take the walk-on stuff. I said, you know, right now it doesn't really matter how I got here. It just matters that I am here and that I take advantage of the opportunity given to me, and I play the role that I'm given on this team. And as of right now, I got to go out there and play that Bear position to the best of my ability, regardless of whether I was the highest recruited athlete to come here or I walked on a team. I got to be the best I can be. So try not to really think about that. I'm very honored and very proud of what I've done, but got to push that aside and go on to the next game.
Okay, and that Bear position is kind of a linchpin on the defense. You're expected to really know a lot of stuff when you step out onto the field.
Sure, and that's what I love about it is they put a lot on your plate, and they expect a lot out of the Bear position. Expect you to get in the box at times and play like a true linebacker, and then you're out in coverage covering those small little receivers at times. So you got to know a lot, and you got to do a lot, but I love that about the position. It gives me a lot of opportunities to do different things and make some plays. So it's a really fun position. It's a lot like what I played in high school, and I think it's the right fit for me and my body type and my knowledge. Sam Hall actually was the position before me this past year, and you know we have kind of similar body types and kind of similar players, and so he was great to watch. He was a student of the game. He picked up things extremely quick, and you know, went out there and excelled, and was a great player at that Bear position, one of the critical players on our defense. So being able to watch him, learn from him, all 3 years I've been here has been great for me.
Okay, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Jake and Kevin, reactions to that interview.
Well, my first reaction is obviously he's a bright guy. The Dean's List is proof, but you could tell he's not only articulate but thoughtful in his answers. As we all know, we interview a lot of guys. Sometimes you have to pull words out of them, and he was definitely not that. So you asked a good question, Stephen, about how this position you have to have a lot of knowledge about what's going on, not only around you defensively, but making reads at the line of scrimmage with what the offense is doing. And obviously, Phil Bennett wants a smart guy there, and Brent's, you know, he fits that mold. And then one more thing before I give way to Kevin is that I've been kind of wondering, you know, how does a former walk-on start for the defending Big 12 champs? But the thing is, we want him to be, you know, an Eddie Lackey type. Well, Eddie Lackey was a two-star guy who had basically, you know, no options other than Baylor. I wouldn't say no, but nothing like Baylor. So, you know, you just have to as a fan, as a media, whatever, you have to put a little faith in these coaches that they know what they're doing. And that, you know, a guy who, sure, he was a walk-on, but they've turned some two stars and no stars into great players, and I think it's capable. They're capable of doing that with Brents.
And with Colin, you know, he's one of those kids that you love. Why you like college football is because, you know, they're thankful for the opportunity. Baylor recognized the dedication, and they gave him the scholarship this year, something that I was told way back in June that this was going to happen. They just wanted to make sure that they got everything, they're all the I's dotted and T's crossed on this. And now he's really taking advantage of this. It's a great thing for him. He is, you know, he's a coach's son. His dad, Gerald Brents, is the former head football coach at Plano High School. He's now the athletic director there. So he understands what it means to play smart, cerebral, understanding spacing. You know, and he got a great guy to watch last year in Sam Hall in that position. And Sam and him are kind of cut from the same cloth a little bit. Sam's a little bigger than Colin was. So I think, you know, I would, through osmosis and through his own hard work, Jake and Steven, I think, you know, Colin willed himself into this position. He absolutely earned it. I hope for his sake and for Baylor's sake that this is the move that everyone can like in August, right before the football season, like it now, and like it just as much as we're getting into the Big 12 season in October.
Yeah, the thing I want to see most from him is he's been on special teams. He's a good tackler. You mentioned his size. I mean, he's not small. He's 6'2", 210. That's pretty thick for that size, and that's a good size for nickelback. I just want to see if he's got speed. And that's what you need on defense. That's what you need in the Big 12. And that's really the only – I haven't been able to monitor the practice, but, you know, no media really can because of the way that Baylor sets it up.
Right.
So, you know, I just want to see if he's got the speed that translates to the Big 12. And if he does, then, yeah, then there's really no concern.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like I say – to me, the most impressive thing about him is, and I kind of brought it up in the interview, and he just kind of like shot past it, is that, you know, when a guy gets into, hey, he made the team, he had already exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
You know, just by being a walk-on and getting to play special teams. I mean, hey, he's getting out on the field in a Big 12 game. And the other thing is how tough it is once a coach kind of feels like he has you tagged, is how tough it is to get his attention and get back in there. I had a young man that I knew quite a few years ago, and he was, you know, stud duck running back all district. He goes to a Div 3 college, gets a high ankle sprain, and boom, he is buried like 5 deep on the depth chart, and he never gets past calisthenics after that. You know, I mean, he doesn't have a chance to impress anybody because he doesn't get any plays. So for a guy to be able to pop up and steal the starting slot like that, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, because what other walk-ons are playing a big role in this team? None, you know. So it is a testament to how hard he worked and how long he stuck it out, Stephen. You're spot on.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to kick over the wide receiver injuries. There's a couple of new honors lists that came out. It used to be a big deal when Baylor got those. It's not a big deal anymore. And then after that, we'll talk a little bit about some of the Big 12 teams and what they're looking at this next year in development since last week.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Okay, we are back, and Jake and Kevin, we got a little bit of disquieting news about Corey Coleman. Not sure he's going to be ready for SMU. Y'all's takes.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Kevin.
Okay. You know, obviously this is a hamstring issue with Corey. It's the second one that he's dealt with in his career at Baylor. He actually popped it, if you will, in the Meet the Bears practice on August the 9th. And, you know, Art and his staff will always be very closed-mouthed about specifics regarding injuries, as we've talked about. Although I can tell you that the way Art was talking about it on and Wednesday's meeting with the media, I got the sense that they're a little bit more concerned about it now than they were before. Whether or not it's a severe pull or a slight tear, you know, who only knows? What point does it serve? I don't know. But if the point is that if there is any chance that they can get him to work out to any extent next week, then they will play him against SMU. If there's been very little change and they can't get him out there, then if I was Baylor, given what this non-conference schedule looks like, I would just say we will see you on September 27th in Ames against Iowa State, because they won't need him. They should handle those three opponents fairly easily. And the last thing is, you want your top players, and I believe Corey is one of those, to be playing at the highest level. You don't want this thing to linger so that you force him to get back out there, and then he re-aggravates it against SMU, and then it's just a chronic issue throughout the entire season where you don't get him at 100%.
Yeah, I think no matter what happens this season, he needs to have off-season hamstring transplant surgery.
Yeah.
You're right, this is the second time it's popped up. Was his true freshman season it happened, is that right?
Right.
And, you know, whether he was going to play or not, that just made the coach's decision there. And, yeah, now it's popping up now, and like you said, Wednesday when or was it Tuesday when Art Briles addressed the media, you're right, he's not forthcoming about injury news. You know, I think we heard several times, Hager might be okay, and then he'd show up on crutches on Saturday. So it's not his job to tell us about injuries. He, you know, I don't blame him. If you don't have to disclose anything, why would you help your opponent?
Right.
But having said all that, you can kind of read between the lines, you can kind of make judgments based on his tone, and it does not sound promising about Coleman right now.
No.
And I agree with you. I mean, you've got the first 3 weeks of non-conference, so that's 3 weeks, and then you've got a bye after that. So really, from this day, from Thursday, he's got, you know, 4.5 weeks. So I don't mean to dismiss Baylor's non-conference schedule, but I don't think Corey Coleman's going to mean a difference between a loss and a win against SMU and at Buffalo. I just don't think it's that bad of an injury to the team. So
no, well,
they have the ability. They can afford to take it slow with him, and I assume that's what they're going to do because they don't need to push it.
It probably increases the opportunity, though, for Katie Kennan to get on the field earlier than we would all expect, because Katie would be playing that slot position right there. So, I mean, we'll all find out. Like I said, just the way it came down today and the way, you know, and sometimes coaches do a great job of sandbagging it. I get that. But
yeah.
I don't think Art's bluffing on this one. And like I said, if he hasn't been responding to whatever treatment's been going on that he's been dealing with for basically the last 10 days, and it's just not – if it's either slightly improving or just not responding, period, then don't worry about it. Just and again, with hamstring injuries, they kind of just work their way through it until they're healed. They kind of heal on their own. You really can't do it. You can do all sorts of stimulation, ice, heat, all whatever, but ultimately it's got to heal on its own.
Yeah. I think the reason why this is most concerning is, one, if it could pop up later in the season, but two, you got Clay Fuller out, and they were listed as co-starters at one inside receiver position. And, you know, I was looking at the depth chart today and the roster. Really, that puts them down to about three, four inside receivers, with Levi, Norwood, Lynx Hawthorne, Katie Cannon, and really, I mean, that's your top three there, so... Now you're just ultra thin at a position you were deep at. So I think that's the concern, is the fact that you lost co-starters. So,
yeah,
I think we might. You know, we saw last year Baylor, despite their reputation for throwing it all day long, they ran a lot of three receiver sets, and I think you'll see a lot of that against SMU, partly because of these injuries.
Yeah, I think though too that a couple of things that I noticed. One, you know, Robbie Rhodes was gone before the season even started. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're thinking you're walking into the season totally loaded, and now you've got Rhodes gone that you figured was going to be in the mix. You got Fuller gone for at least half the season. Now you got Coleman gone, and like I said, on these hamstrings, you're not really sure when he comes back. So, you know, I don't care how deep you are at a position, you see three guys that you projected to be on the field go down, it's got to affect you.
Yeah, it does. You mentioned Rhodes, and this is kind of an aside, but Craig Smoak on ESPN Central Texas, I was on the show weekly, but a few weeks back, he said, well, Robbie Rhodes is gone. Kyle Foulkes, another 2013 signee, he never made it to campus. I don't know if you remember Art Briles saying we signed the fastest player in the nation, the strongest player in the nation, the best receiver in the nation, when he's talking about Billings, Foulkes, and Robbie Rhodes. Well, two of those three are gone. So that's you know, this again an aside, but that brag he was making has lost a little steam, unfortunately. But I guess Andrew Billings is kind of making up for it just with his play.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I've noticed about Briles is that some coaches, you know, when you talk about sandbagging, Briles is more likely to put on a happy face. But I've never heard Briles sandbagging. I've never heard him say, this guy won't play, and he didn't play.
Right.
He might say, I think this guy will play, and he doesn't play. But he'll never make an injury seem worse than it is.
No, I just think that Art's just creative in the way he answers the questions, and maybe the sandbag. And I don't mean sandbagging the way you described it, although I think that's the way most people perceive it. I just use it as a term of saying coaches just don't want to tip their hand until they absolutely know, and why should they? Was really what I meant by that. Well, mm-hmm. I think, you know, with Coleman, he could be such an important part of this team if he's healthy, and then they get into the meat of the Big 12 schedule where it's really going to count.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the really important part is to, you know, Art even said today or even said Wednesday that, you know, we're not going to put him on the field until he's completely healthy. So if he's not healthy going next week, then if it were me, and I'm not him, of course, but if it were me, I'd just say, We'll just see you at the end of September in Ames and go from there.
Yeah, well, I don't think you automatically rule him out for the rest of non-conference, but you definitely rule him out for SMU, and then you just take it week by week from there.
Sure.
Yeah, and of course, one of the things we hadn't mentioned because he's back, but you know, Goodley got that little tweak, and mm-hmm. I noticed he's been getting his. They've got one of the trainers with it's like a little rolling pin out there, and he's been getting the backs of his thighs rolled
mm-hmm.
for class every day. So, you know, Goodley's already had, and it's like you say with these wide receivers, they're so fast, but boy, something can snap. Their legs are strung like banjos.
On the good side, you know, well, Jay Lee, you know, he's still got a little bit of a hamstring issue, and they're being very, very cautious with him. Although I get the sense that I think they feel like they will have him for SMU. They're just being very cautious with him. The good news, though, the other day was that Johnny Jefferson, the running back who had the little strained MCL last week, returned to practice last week, so that's a good sign because they're going to need Johnny, obviously, as the third back and potentially on kickoff returns. So if that's the direction they're going to go with him in that capacity. But, you know, overall, really, if you look at the Corey Coleman and Clay Fuller injuries, I think Baylor's been fairly fortunate because, you know, how many days a week do we read stories about significant players going down to season-ending injuries, a la Braxton Miller, the quarterback at Ohio State,
who
just messed up his shoulder and his season is gone, his Heisman Trophy hopes are gone, and Ohio State's potential national championships hopes are probably gone as well. So it's just... But every single day, if you're reading on the wire, you're reading about, you know, so-and-so lost their so-and-so player to a blown ACL. Kansas, right before we started this podcast, Kansas has lost its two top running backs. for the season with an ACL and an Achilles injury. And again, for Kansas, they need all the help they can get, but that doesn't help them. But even so, even if you are Kansas or Baylor or Alabama or whatever, just losing somebody who you think is going to contribute this year really just changes how you want to approach the season. So in that regard, Baylor as a whole can withstand Fuller and can withstand Coleman for the interim because the depth is there, even though some of it is inexperienced.
Yeah, and let's kick over. Now, we know, you know, Katie Cannon's, he told us in the interview, he's getting first-team snaps. Davion Hall said that they haven't committed to him one way or the other whether they're going to pull the red shirt off. Does the red shirt come off?
It depends. I think you have to see what happens at other – he's an outside receiver, so he's not going to line up where Katie Cannon is or Coleman. It depends. You know, if I think one, if there are injuries, then it probably comes off. Or two, if he's just unstoppable in practice, and they feel like he can help them win games now, then I think they'll burn the shirt. I don't think they'll burn it just to get him playing time, though. I think they're deep enough and good enough as a team that they're not going to burn it just to get a guy in mop up duty. They'll play him if they want to. They think he can help them win games.
Okay, and anybody else? Okay, Quan Jones. Thoughts on him?
You know, he's interesting. Quan's about, what is he, about 6'4", 205, 210 pounds, something like that. He's a big-looking kid. And, you know, he's kind of the guy that no one ever talks about with this whole wide receivers course. Because he redshirted last year. He wasn't highly recruited. If you will. I mean, he had a ton of offers, but I'm just saying in terms of the recognition as a whole, he's a big target. And I know that I can remember when he and Marcel Aitman were, you know, two of the highly, you know, off that Plano, that Wiley East team, and everyone kind of liked Aitman a lot more. That I just think that Quan is just one of those guys who's always going to be kind of in the shadow, but I would be very, very curious as to see should he get on the field, what he can do, because when I saw him in the spring game, I really was intrigued by the way he performed out there, and he looks just so much more physical. That a year going through that strength and conditioning program made him look physically more imposing than what he looked like when he got on campus.
Well, Bryles mentioned that when I asked him, and one of the things I asked him about Quan Jones is I specifically asked him about his height, and Bryles just kind of like, he's been working with Kaz, and he's got his weight up that we feel like he can get out and help contribute. And so Bryles kind of brushed off the height, but he's mentioned that he's beefed up, and apparently Bryles thought when he came on campus that he wasn't carrying enough weight to be able to take the punishment.
Yeah, he was light of frame for sure when he got here. So yeah, he definitely needs that weight. Another guy I'm curious about if he'll just ever do anything is Caleb Moore. He's listed outside receiver. Redshirt as a freshman last year, as a redshirt freshman, was injured during the year and didn't play. You talk about Quan Jones is kind of forgotten. You know, he's twice as forgotten, and you just wonder if it's his time running out because you got Davion Hall, you know, at that same position. He's already passed him according to the depth chart. So he was a guy that the staff liked. He was a late signee, I think, in 2012. So I'm curious if he'll make any impact this year or if he's just kind of destined to sit at the bottom of the roster.
Okay. Moving from Baylor, let's kind of run around the Big 12. A couple of things that were of interest. One was Phil Steele came out with his most overrated and underrated teams, and his number one underrated team in the Big 12 was TCU. He says they could be up to 14 in the rankings this year. What do y'all think?
Well, first of all, he didn't say they're the most underrated team in the Big 12. He said they're the most underrated team in the nation. He has them as his preseason number 14 team. you know, it's really difficult to say because you look at how many losses they had. I think it was four losses by a touchdown or less that all came down to the final few minutes. If those all four go in their way, they're an 8-4 team and playing in a bowl. Obviously, they didn't do it, so there's something to be said for not being able to finish games, too. I don't know how he can be so confident about being number 14 when they've got a totally new offensive system. They've got a cast-off from A&M, or they've got Trevon Boykin, who apparently is the lead for starting quarterback, and, you know, we've seen him before. He's not your prototypical quarterback, great runner, but I don't know. I think their defense is always going to be great. They seem to, like Baylor's offense, they seem to plug in guys maybe you've never heard of, and all of a sudden they're very productive. I think they could be a fringe top 25 team. I just don't know how they could reach number 14. They could surprise me, but I don't see 14 in their future this year.
I don't know. I think with them, and of course, you know, Phil put this, I want to say, I did not get a chance to see it, Stephen. Did he say that, was he making these projections today before, or what? Or when did he make these?
August 19th.
Okay, so he made those yesterday, so it's long after the Devontae Fields incident happened.
Yep, he mentions Devontae Fields not being there.
Right. Well, and TCU could argue that he hasn't been with that program for 2 years anyway, but that's another story.
Yeah, what he's basing it on is they're getting 15 starters back. That they were, they had a lot of really close losses, he said he only sees them being underdogs against OU at Baylor and at Texas, but by a TD or less in each.
I can't say that. I can't agree with that. Only because I just think there are too many issues with this offense to make me believe, and as Jake touched on earlier, the fact that you know, you're bringing in a new offensive system where there's going to be just a period of adjustment. And to be honest with you, TCU's, I'm not a big fan of Matt Jokel if he winds up playing or starting in some capacity this year. I think Trevon Boykin is a great athlete who probably should not be playing quarterback, but because he is a great athlete, you got to put him at your best spot there. And I just – and the running back situation there, I mean, look, Aaron Green, we all thought this was a great move for them, the transfer from Nebraska. He was a dud last year. Injuries, inconsistency, whatever, practice habits, all that sort of stuff. B.J. Catalan's probably their most reliable running back on that squad. And then you've just got so many questions with their wide receiver group. And then their offensive line was not very good last year at all. And so you couple all that together with a new system coming in, and I'm having trouble seeing that. And, you know, maybe they're a borderline bowl team, but I never put stock in saying, well, golly, we were 15 points away from – well, you know, you lost. And the reason why you lost is because you either, A, you didn't have enough quality players to make the difference, or you didn't make enough plays to win the football game. And that's really what it comes down to. I mean, Jake, the Baylor game is a perfect example. Casey Paul drives TCU down to the inside the Baylor 15-yard line, what it was about the 10-yard line, I think it was, and they come up with an interception on a Terrell Burt deflection, and that comes up with an interception that seals the game. Why? Because Baylor had a more talented player in that position to make that play than TCU had that player to come up with the touchdown. And that's just really what it is in my view. Maybe I'm too black and white about it, but I just kind of get tired of the minutiae of, well, you know, they were 15 points away from doing this. They were 20. Well, you know what? You lost. And there's a reason why you lost.
I mean, I was surprised when they missed the bowl last year. I'll be very surprised if they miss again just because of that defense is so good. And
I wouldn't be surprised if they missed a bowl this year at all.
You wouldn't be surprised.
No, I would not be surprised if TCU missed a bowl this year. I have that little faith and belief in their offense.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, look, if Trevon Boykin is starting, I mean, that's not a system for him. They're bringing in the Texas Tech system. That's not fit for his skill set. So, I mean, if he's starting, man, what is Matt Jokel?
I mean, I like it.
But
you're right. I like their. Yeah, I like their front six. I love their linebacker group. It's a great looking group. But and then you've got Chucky Hunter, who's going to be one of the anchors on the defensive line. But you got to score points. That's, you know, to use the cliche revolutionary line that all the NFL commentators talk about. This league is about scoring points. Well, yeah, that's what the game is about, is scoring points. And how is TCU going to score? I just don't know that.
I don't think their offense is going to be as bad or is that uncertain as you do, but I'm definitely not sold anywhere close on it. I just, again, their defense, I don't care who they plug in, it's always very good. You know, they Baylor was a very wounded team when they went into Fort Worth, and Art Briles obviously had just lost his brother. So there were some difficult circumstances there, and TCU had nothing to lose there. But the defense really didn't have its way with Baylor, but they almost basically shut Baylor down. Baylor relied on a couple of defensive scores and some big plays. You know, the year before, Baylor was supposed to kill TCU in Waco, and went up 7-0 on a Terrence Williams, you know, touchdown from Nick Florence, and then just got blown out of the stadium after that. TCU plays Baylor very well. Their defense is built to slow down these high-powered offenses, these spreads. So, again, I'll be pretty stunned if they miss a bowl. They've got an easy non-conference schedule. They're going to start 3-0. So you got to think they can win at least three Big 12 games, Kansas, Iowa State, and then someone else.
TCU is there was a boxer before either one of you guys was born named Jerry Quarry. And Jerry Quarry was one of those guys that if you could beat him, you were good for a you were a good enough boxer to get a title shot. If you couldn't beat Jerry Quarry, you were, you know, not good enough for a title shot. He was that guy just right on the edge. And, you know, to me, that's TCU. I give them a chance in any game they play because TCU has this really good ability. I've watched them do it to Baylor 2 years in a row. They go in there, and Baylor likes to run that precision offense. You know, they really like to get stuff going. And TCU just has a way of getting you to get down and play ugly and wrestle in the mud with them. And they can turn in – they want to turn into a slugfest and kind of hang in. So, I mean, I give them that slugger's chance in any game, but I don't think they can keep it up all season. I do think they've got a good chance at a bowl game.
Well, I think the second podcast where we've spent about 5 to 10 minutes on TCU, so I don't know how this is happening. So we got to move on to the next topic, Stephen.
Okay. I think the last one that the last two that we want to talk about, one is he's got Oklahoma State as the most over – as one of the most – the third most overrated team in the country, and they're only ranked number 33 right now. So he must think Oklahoma State's not going to be very good.
Well, they did lose a lot of kids off that team this year, last year, and, of course, they lost a great playmaker in Josh Stewart. So I can see that, and there's not a lot of confidence in J.W. Walsh, even though he's played and he's started and he has a lot of experience, that there's just not a lot of – there's a lot of unknowns with their offense as well. Vis-a-vis, though, my feeling is that – my feeling, though, is that I just think that I have a lot of respect for what Mike Gundy does. I think he finds a way. He's kind of built, in my view, a program there. Are they going to win 10 games this year? Probably not. Are they going to win 8? Possibly. He's that kind of coach where he can find a way to maximize 7-8 wins in a transition year and pull off a win against somebody that he probably shouldn't be pulling off a win against. And so I think that they would be, you know, maybe 33 is, I'd say probably Phil might be a little bit, I would defer to him on that one. But at the same time, I don't think they're going to be horrible. I like their chances of going to a bowl far more than I do at TCU at this point.
Well, I agree with that. I think it's, you know, Phil Steele, he's a professional. He knows what he's doing. But I would not have TCU 14 and Oklahoma State ranked worse than 33rd. I mean, that's I think, just not quite understanding, like you said, that he has built a program. They've recruited well. Since Gundy's taken over, and they recruit really well, and yeah, I mean, I think Baylor is kind of getting a benefit of the doubt sometimes with the defense because of the respect for what Baylor has been doing lately, and I think Oklahoma State deserves that too. That, you know, they lost a lot of starters, but they're plugging them in with guys who are highly recruited players, and I think they could finish top 25, just depending on how J.W. Walsh, you know, really takes on that quarterback job. I disagree with Phil on that one much more than I do with TCU.
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, that I don't think you can forget about with Oklahoma State, because I traveled to both Oklahoma State Stadium and TCU Stadium last year, and the home field advantage at Oklahoma State cannot be overestimated. That is one weird stadium. the fans are like less than 5 feet from the field. They're slapping on the walls with these boards, and it is I don't know how Oklahoma walked in there and beat them in Bedlam last year, but they did. But they got a home field advantage that TCU can't touch.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, I think TCU, what they did prior to the Big 12, they're still kind of riding that, feeling from sentiment from the media. Because I put TCU below Oklahoma State right now. I put them below Kansas State. Probably below Texas, and then you're throwing in Oklahoma and Baylor too. So you know that puts TCU what, sixth or seventh in the Big 12. That's not a top 25 team.
This is really a prove it year for both TCU and West Virginia.
It's funny. I was on a Nashville station today talking about this with both West Virginia and TCU, and I was asked why A&M and Missouri seem to have fairly easier transitions from the Big 12 to the SEC than West Virginia and TCU did, moving from the Mountain West and Big East to the Big 12. And my rationale was, well, you already had A&M and Missouri already in BCS type of conferences to where they understood the talent and the speed to what they had to recruit for to try and stay competitive with those types of programs. With the SEC, a little bit of a different animal there just because of the kind of recruiting that's going on there. But nonetheless, in principle, they had it. With West Virginia and TCU, they were coming from conferences, even though the Big East at the time was a BCS conference, but it wasn't the grind-out kind of conference week in and week out like the Big 12, the Big 10, the SEC, and the Pac-12 are at this point. And they've had to recruit for that, and I think that's been kind of a shock to the system. Look, if I use the example, if you're West Virginia and you were going against Syracuse, Connecticut, Pittsburgh, and a couple of other, and Rutgers or whatnot or whatever.
Florida.
That's a different walk in the woods than it would be when you're going in consecutive weeks or just in the same season as Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor, Kansas State, and Texas Tech. It's much different. It's apples and oranges, and West Virginia and TCU are finally catching that. And in TCU's case, and I know you've made reference to the Rose Bowl championship team too, Jake, where you thought they could win a BCS conference that year. That's neither here nor there, but I will say this. They've had to recruit much differently because now they have to play these teams in consecutive weeks, whereas in the Mountain West, they would get Utah, great challenge, then have a couple of, if you will, layups of like Colorado State and Wyoming, then you get to BYU. And then after that, and maybe San Diego State would push you a little bit if you went out to San Diego, but other than that, you really weren't getting the week after week grinding effect that you are in a P5 conference. And I think that's what West Virginia and TCU are trying to get on top of so that they can get up to speed, so that they can handle that weekly grind. I don't think they're there yet, but they're getting closer. At least I'm sure they like to think they are.
Okay, and closing out, last question of the segment and the show. I have been reading things on Charlie Strong that, boy, he is the greatest thing that ever occurred. They were talking about him lifting weights before the Big 12 media days, at 4 in the morning in the hotel gym. And then there are other people in there saying this guy's an average coach, that, you know, he's a good motivator, but average coach. What do y'all think about the X Factor, Charlie Strong? Jake?
Yeah, well, I'm not ready to comment on his coaching because I didn't watch Louisville enough to say whether he's a great coach or not. Obviously, he worked hard to get where he is, and that's something to be commended. what I do find funny is, though, is that when he was kicking off all these players, I saw it on Twitter. You know, they said Charlie Strong kicks off 10 players. He's making changes. Mark Richt of Georgia kicks off 10 players. He's lost control of his team. You know, it's just he's new there. And so any decision he makes, any hard-line decision he makes, he seems to be praised for it, which, I don't know, I find it kind of silly. Because it's just a matter of what kind of lens you're looking at it through. Mark Richt has been in Georgia for a while. You know, the fact that he kicks off guys, again, people say he's lost control because it happens quite a bit. I think it's silly. I can't comment on how great of a coach he is. I do admire him for the kind of, the way he's treating the players, you know, kind of making them earn everything. There's so much more discipline in that program than the end of Mack Brown's tenure. So I think Texas needed that. I think from that standpoint, Texas is going to have a team that shows up and plays really hard and plays tough, you know, two things that they were accused of early last season of not doing. And so I think from that standpoint, you know, he's going to be a good coach. As far as his decision-making, as far as his tactical decisions, I don't know. We'll start to see this year, but it is a major X factor, Stephen. I mean, you have a completely different personality running basically the same program as last year. Changes here and there, of course, but you know, it's very interesting to see what results he'll get out of kind of what, you know, with Mack Brown's players, basically.
I think we're at the end of camp and people are looking for things to talk about and they're trying to make up a lot of junk and they have no idea what they're talking about, and there's probably some pensiveness going on and people are freaking out who might follow Texas, because that could be their thinking of saying they don't know what to make of this whole thing, and they really aren't sure what the season is going to be like. And whether that's being a Texas fan, a guy who covers Texas year in and year out, or a national guy, people who are throwing these comments out there, are they throwing it out there for shock value? Part of me thinks that's behind this, but it's like, you know what? It's August 20th as we're recording this, and the first game of the season isn't for another 10-11 days for a lot of people, and everyone's just antsy to get going here, eager, whatever you want to call it, and they're tired of watching practices where guys are hitting each other in pads when they aren't doing anything, and scrimmages people are kind of whipped by scrimmage reports and things like that. People just want the season to start. I think that's... And look, Charlie Strong did not win, 23 games at Louisville because he was awful. You know, he didn't bring it to Florida down in the Sugar Bowl a couple of years ago because he had no idea what he was doing. And so I think whatever people's perceptions of Charlie Strong are their own. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's a very good disciplinarian. I'm glad that he has an opportunity to coach at the Division I level. He had so many interviews before Louisville finally pulled the trigger and offered him the chance. He's coming to one of the big, you know, blue blood programs in college football, so there's going to be lots of scrutiny, lots of expectations. If he went from Louisville to, say, Kansas, I'm just throwing that out there as a hypothetical, he wouldn't get anyone's amount of attention. But because he's at the University of Texas, and the new coach of the University of Texas is always under the microscope, it's just a different world. And because Charlie just has a different way of doing things than what Texas fans or people who followed Texas for the previous 16 years, they just aren't sure what they're going to watch, and they may not know what they're going to see even throughout that. And who knows, when he made that comment about that they're not ready to contend for a national championship this year, even though he later said that he was talking about putting this thing in phases, everyone flipped out, just because reactionary is the name of the game, and putting any foresight or any thought into anything of substance goes right out the window when a comment like that, it gets a lot of play.
Yeah, well, when he said that, I thought Jurgen Klinsmann was the coach. Yeah, saying there's no chance to win it. You're right, though, Kevin. I mean, nobody has – I mean, you can judge a little off what he did at Louisville, but you still don't know what he's going to do at Texas. Unlike Baylor, I think you will kind of find out much of their identity early on because they have a difficult non-conference schedule. So they're going to be tested early, and you know, there's a chance they could be 1-2 when they face Baylor. I think that's the fourth game of the year. So
you know, and to be the ultimate cynic, we don't know what Baylor's going to do. We think we know what Baylor is going to do.
Well, I mean, we have a better idea. We have a much better idea.
We have a much better idea. And see, that's the thing, is we have a better idea with Baylor because we know a lot about them because their coach has been in place for several years. Just like people at Oklahoma know what they think. They think they have a better idea because Bob Stoops has been a Norman since, what, 1999 or whatever it is. Yeah. And with Texas, he just got there in January, and they haven't played a football game yet, and so everyone's just kind of trying to throw stuff to see what sticks against the wall.
Yeah, my only guess on it is I think the start's going to be kind of rough. But I think from a Baylor perspective, if I were Baylor, I would rather have them on the schedule when I do than late in the season, because I do believe that they'll get stronger as the season goes on.
I'd like to think you're right on that.
Okay, that about wraps it up for this week, and we'll see you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.